So there's a story about these two young boys. They're 8 and 10, and they're known to be very mischievous in their town. And so the mom kind of is at her wit's end at some point, like, what am I going to do with these kids? And so she goes to her pastor, who's a really big, sort of formidable physical presence with a big booming voice. And she says, "Can you talk to my boys?" And he says, "Yeah, I want to talk to them individually." So he calls in the youngest. And he says in his big booming voice, "Where is God?" And the boy says nothing because he's frozen with fear. And so he just kind of looks around and he doesn't say anything. And so the pastor says a little bit louder, "Where is God?" And the boy is now, just really, really scared. And so he's looking down, he's not saying anything, he's sort of, fidgeting. And finally, the pastor gets up in his full stature, even puts a finger in the boy's face and says, "Where is God?" And the boy just runs out of the office screaming, runs all the way home, runs up the stairs into his room, slams the door in his closet, and just sits down shaking. I know, sad, right? I heard somebody go, "Oh." And his older brother comes home and opens the closet door and says, "What are you doing in here?" And he starts gasping for breath and he says, "We are in really big trouble now." He said, "They lost God." And they think we did it. Does sort of feel sometimes like we lost God, doesn't it? Do you ever feel that way? Of course, we know that's not possible, right? It's not possible to lose the connection with the one that we always have. Yet our perception can tell us differently. And then when we're in that perception, we might even start looking for scapegoats, right? A little blaming going around for how we got off track. But the thing is, we can know this idea because we talk about it all the time in unity, don't we? We're God is, I am. We're one with this. We're one with the source. And it's one thing to talk about it or to even affirm it and say it and think we believe it all up in here, right? It's a cognitive idea or a theory and maybe even something sometimes we feel in our hearts, but to really know it in our hearts. That's a distinction, isn't it? To know that is an inseparable part of us, this source of all goodness. And when we say goodness, we mean anything you want to fill the blank in with goodness. Goodness isn't like good, bad, relative. It's like an essence of permeating goodness in the world. It's harmony at times for us, or it's peace for times at us, for us, or it's love, or it's connection, or freedom, or whatever it is that we might be longing for and feeling a little distance from. We step back in, we return to the land of our soul, we come back home, and we remember again. And so that we want to bridge whatever disconnect there might be from just a mental knowing or a mental speaking to really knowing, feeling it, sensing it, having that space in us. And there will be times, right, along our journey, there will be times that we drift off the path and we go into dark places of scarcity. Or there have been, I'll say, up until now, there have been those times most of us can relate to in our lives. It doesn't have to be our reality. If we don't forget, if we stay centered, if we stay in the knowing, if we stay in the land of our soul, there's nothing to return to because we're just hanging out there all the time, right? In that infinite presence of all the goodness that we could have. And as human beings on this journey, we are likely at times to drift away, to think we've lost God, to get that sense. So this second week in our Abundance Project, this is the Abundance Project, really. This is the essence of the Abundance Project. We're using this book throughout our fall series. We have some study groups going on. We still have some of these books, I think, in the bookstore. So for the next 7 weeks, we started last week, we'll be talking about the concepts in this book. I mean, he could have written it in about one sentence, but we need, I don't know how many pages, probably 247 pages to hear the same thing over and over again. It's why we come back every Sunday, right? To hear the same thing over and over again. It's why I keep doing these sermons and reading these books and sitting in prayer around this, because it's not a one-time thing. That's why we return to our soul over and over again, because we are on a journey of remembering and forgetting, and remembering is the key, that the source is all there is. And it's not just something outside of us, it's something inside of us. These are not things we learn in school. Did anybody learn these ideas in school? No. So it's, you know, unless we've been introduced to it, even though it's in our DNA, it's in us, these knowings, this connection. There's a feeling, there's a resonance in us, right, when we first get introduced to these kinds of things, where we say, oh yeah, that feels right. Has that happened to you along the way on your spiritual journey? Maybe you've come to some places and it's like something just doesn't feel quite true for you or resonant for you, and then you come into, maybe it's unity, and when you say, oh, I feel like I'm home. I had a lot of people describe their experience like that. And that's what it's like to come back to the soul, home, back home to a sense of love and peace and security and all that good stuff. So today what we're looking at is the abundance blind spots, the places when we do get off track and we don't even necessarily know we're off track, or we know we're off track, but we don't know why. We don't know what it is that we're not seeing, because it's a blind spot, right? So we got to get a sense of a larger perspective, right? If you're driving down the road and somebody is in your blind spot, I think you have to have an old car for that to happen, right? I had a Honda 2003 up until recently, so I got the blind spot thing. But if so, you know, you got to look in a different angle, a different way to see the full perspective. And so it's that understanding, it's that recognition that we are looking to illuminate these abundance blind spots. You could call them abundant BS if you want, because that's, and that maybe will make you remember them. Because it is that, right? They're just false beliefs. They're just ideas that aren't true. And so we're illuminating them, and then we're going to reverse them. Sound good? You want to do this? All right. So we're going to look at 3 of the 5 this week and 2 next week. This is all out of chapter 2 if you're following along in the book. So this first one is really the big umbrella. This is one we talk about a lot, I think. It's the one that everything fits under, essentially. It's like when we're off, this is it. This is the one. And it goes like this. We are separate from our good. Or you could say we are separate from our God. And then he goes on to explain it more specifically in the context of abundance. And we must get it, achieve it, and attract it. Now you say, well, don't we talk about attracting our abundance all the time? Yes, we do. And we'll get into that in a moment. So if you think you might have this blind spot, here are some of the signs and symptoms he lays out for us. Feeling of incompleteness, a feeling of insecurity, a feeling of not being supported, a feeling of not being worthy, a feeling of not being incomplete, or feeling of not being complete or incomplete. Or you might be putting your happiness off into some future goal. So you're always focusing on, I will be happy when, and then you fill in the blank what that future goal is when that's achieved. Or perhaps you're in a space of comparing, judging, less than, more than, I'm less than, more than, or this person is less than, more than, or whatever it may be. Overworking can be one of the signs and symptoms. Or believing that you must constantly push and struggle and sacrifice to get what you want. So if you have any of these signs, you might be experiencing some of this abundance blind spot. So let's go back to the law of attraction for a moment, because we talk about that one all the time. The third principle is a part of that, co-creating life, right? So it's this idea that we are attracting our good to us. The issue that he's talking about is that when we have the focus outside of ourselves, we're focusing on the thing we want to attract, right? So that's where maybe we tend to put our attention and our perspective, and where the good is, where we generate it, where it comes to us is from within, right? right? So it's the knowing within ourselves that that whatever it is that we're attracting is already here. We have it in abundance. Now, you might say, well, if it's a house or a car, I'm not really getting that because I don't have that inside of me. Clearly not, right? But what you do have inside of you is what would you have if you had that thing? I mean, a house, that's something that's like a big one for a lot of us in this area, right? So let's take that one as an example. If you want to have a home, it's not that you're just focusing on the home, you know, that thing outside. It's not that you're spending all your time on Zillow and that's how you're attracting it, right? You might have to do some of these steps, but the key to attracting is inside. The key is, how do I feel when I have the house? Why do I even want the house? I want comfort. I want sanctuary. I want a sense of ease. I want that sense of abundance for years to come. I want a sense of security, a sense of home, right? I want to return to the land of my soul every time I open the door to that home. You know, whatever it is that is like drawing you, that's where the good is. That's where the generation of the attraction happens. And so it's settling into that space and that feeling nature that is what actually creates the experience that we want to attract to ourselves. So even with some of our spiritual laws, we can get distracted by the outer and miss what it is that we're working with on the inner. It all comes back to source. It always all comes back to source, right? It always comes back home. All of our problems are really based in this abundance blind spot, in this idea that we are separate from spirit. And so it's getting into recognizing the damage that can happen by believing this and moving ourselves into the experience of our oneness again and again and again. I do feel a bit like a broken record, I have to admit. I just got to come clean here. It does feel, and the book feels a little bit like that too. And I feel like I need it after all these years, right, of learning about prosperity, of teaching prosperity, of doing the work. It's like I still feel like I need it. And if it comes 10 or 20 times with maybe a slightly different word, but the basic idea, I feel the shift starting to happen. Are you starting to feel a shift happen? Any of you? Yeah, some of you are. And some of the ones I've talked to that are facilitating book groups are saying that they're starting to feel something happening here. So stick with it, even if it seems sometimes a little repetitive, because it's the shift that we're after. You know, it's not the intellectual knowing, it's the inner shift that we're after here. So this journey that we're on, that we often go through, is much like the journey of the prodigal son. Do you remember this? You can substitute prodigal daughter, prodigal offspring. You know, just it's the idea, right? That there is these two children. There, and in the case of the story from Luke, they're two brothers, and they have a wealthy father, and they have a comfortable life. And the younger brother longs to go out in the world and explore. And so he goes to his father and he says, "Dad, can I have my inheritance early?" And the father is very generous. He says, "Of course." And he divvies it up between the two boys. And pretty soon the young son starts making his plans to go off to faraway lands. And as he goes and travels off into those faraway lands, he starts having a good time with all that money that he had in his pocket, right? And it runs right through his pocket with all kinds of wild living and squandering of his wealth until there's a famine across the land and he's got no money left. And he's looking around thinking, what in the world am I going to do? So he finds a farmer, and he asks the farmer if he has any work for him, and he ends up feeding the pigs. Now, this is a good Jewish boy feeding the pigs, so keep that in mind too, right? He's hit a low point. And not only that, he is so hungry that when he's giving the pods to the pigs, he's kind of envious. He wants some of those pods. He's so hungry. And he just has a moment. You ever have these moments when you've just hit a low point and it's like a mirror just seems to arise up out of nowhere and you go, what in the world am I doing? How did I get here? It seems like that's the kind of moment he's having in the pigsty, you know? It's just like, and then he says, what am I doing? My father's servants have plenty to eat and more left over, and I'm sitting here starving. Why don't I just go home? I mean, I'm unworthy to be his son at this point, but why don't I just go home, apologize, beg forgiveness, and ask if I could live out my life as a servant in his place and in that land? So this is what he plans to do, and he heads back home. And as he's coming toward home, his father happens to be standing out in the fields, and he sees his son. And so what does the father do? Does he admonish him? Does he start yelling stuff, get away? Does he get out his shotgun? Now we're storytelling. It's true. Yeah, there wasn't one back then, was there? Bow and arrow. Yeah. Anyway. Tyler's a storyteller, so like when he makes these little comments, we go off in this land of storytelling together. So anyway, here we are, right? Dad is welcoming the son home. And that is exactly what he does. He opens his arms. He starts moving toward his son. He embraces him. He kisses him. My long-lost son, he was dead, and now he's alive. He was lost, and now he's found. And the boy is like, I'm unworthy to be your son. I've sinned against you. I've sinned against heaven. I am so sorry. And I just, you know, make me one of your servants. And his father's just like, pfft. Nonsense. And he calls to the servants and he says, bring the best of the robes, bring him a ring, bring the fatted calf so that we may celebrate together. And they celebrate the son who has turned home. This returned home. This is what happens to us when we come home. When we come back, when we return to the land of our soul, when we come back home to source, we are never punished. So don't punish yourself. Anybody ever do that? Yeah, well, I'm a spiritual being. I should have never done that. You know, I should know better. I've been studying this stuff forever. And we get off course. And then when we recognize it, we're terrible to ourselves. But remember instead that the truth is the source, the spirit, the God is welcoming us back with love and celebration and joy. Thank God my child is back. Thank God my beloved has returned so that I can lavish abundant good upon them, love and joy and everything they could possibly want or need. And all of that I'm personifying in a way, but all of that is in here, right? All of that happens inside your own heart, inside your own being. You know what it feels like when you've drifted away and then you sit down and you have a really good meditation and you go, oh, I'm like a flower that just got watered, right? You know that feeling, right? Oh, my mind is finally not so busy and there's just peace. That's what happened. You went back home. You reconnected to your source. That's all that ever really happens, is that we go off on a journey, we forget, we lose sight, we wake up one day, and we go back home. And over we do that. The more we do it, the more the homecoming feels good, and the more often we come home, pretty soon we go, you know, I think I'm just going to stick around. I think I'll just stay in this good juju. And I'm glad you will, because in that space and out of that space is all the abundance that you will co-create. Because it's from there that we create, not out here. We can manifest stuff, we can attract stuff, but it all is happening here. So that's where our focus needs to be. Blind spot number one is we are separate from our good and we must get it, achieve it, or attract it. And it's countering abundant truth is we are one with all good. We can't add or lose anything. That last part is really important, right? We can't add or lose anything, because we sure do start believing that we are busy adding and losing. We're in that game of adding and subtracting. So all good, this idea of all good, we are one with all good, because sometimes we get tripped up on this, like it's good and bad, but it means goodness, essentially. And that goodness is however you describe goodness. So it could be freedom, it could be connection, it could be celebration, you know, whatever it is that you're needing and longing for in your life, that's the goodness that you are creating and attracting and generating from. And so coming back to that idea of be still and know that I am is the return to all goodness. And it's from there that it will all spring forth. It's the same place that we go back to if we want to manifest something in the outer, right? If we want to bring to us whatever it is that's in the outer, it's back to that feeling space. It's back to those qualities. And then that outer material thing, whatever it may be, can come to us. If we lose something in the outer world, we haven't lost anything in truth, because we can regenerate again and again and again. So this leads us to blind spot number two, which is abundance blind spot. Money and material things are wealth. And the abundant truth to that is real wealth is invisible, infinite, and within you. But we sure have been conditioned to believe money and material things equals wealth, haven't we? So this idea does not make money and material things bad. There's nothing wrong with money and material things. Again, it just puts the emphasis on the wrong spot. So they're symbols. Those are symbols of abundance. They are outer manifestations of abundance, but it's not the abundance itself. We want to put our attention on the divine essence. You know, the founders of our country and later the Congress understood these ideals, and they even had it printed on our money. A lot of us don't use cash too much anymore, but next time you do, take a look at the bill again. What does it say? E pluribus unum, out of many, one. That's what the founders came up as the national motto. And later, Congress, and I think in the 50s, decided it was in God we trust. Both excellent ideas, right? The trust in God, the faith in God, and the idea of oneness. Out of our beautiful diversity, we are one. So these ideals are actually printed on our money to remind us that it's not the bill itself, it's the qualities that are in it, in us. In the source and out of the source, real wealth and material things come out of invisible, infinite wealth. So Derek Rydell says, when we make an inner connection with the substance of life, it takes form in our experience. But the form is the added thing, not the thing itself. He goes on to say, when we're anchored to the real thing, to the source within us, no matter what seemingly threatens, diminishes, or even destroys the outer form, we can always recreate it out of indestructible, incorruptible reality of our being from which it came. This alone is so valuable to take in. Because if you think about the times in life when you get to that place, maybe you have to file bankruptcy. Or maybe you were just told you have a disease. Or maybe you're getting a divorce. And when we are going through these things, we think we have lost everything, right? We even say words like that. I lost everything. I lost my home. I mean, people going through the storms right now are probably feeling this way, that have lost their homes, right? Or even if there's been loss of life. I mean, there's just a lot of depth in the feeling place as a human being when we go through these things. And what Derek is trying to show us is that in the outer, something went away, but that's temporal. and you can recreate from the inner and rebuild once again, even faster than we may think possible. So if you have, you probably know somebody who's filed bankruptcy before, and now they're wealthy again. They've rebuilt their wealth, right? Do you know anybody who's ever been sick and is whole and well and vital now? Have you ever met anybody, or maybe you are someone who was divorced and never thought you'd have another partner and found love again? Some people even say it was better than the first time. How did it all happen? In here, in this incorruptible, inexhaustible, infinite space of creativity and abundance. Whatever it is that you desire, it's already here. It's hard for our physical minds to imagine that because we're taught over and over that this is reality, right? And it can be a part of our reality, but it's not the real thing. We got to move and get back to and return to the essence of where it all comes from. And we have it available to us 24/7 right here within us. So as we consider all of this, let's move finally into the last one, abundance blind spot number 5, which really addresses something deep, a collective kind of woundedness. And probably the one I'm going to venture to guess that if all of us took a survey, that we would find, a lot of us in this room would find ourselves resonating a bit with this, find ourselves in this blind spot a little bit. It might be a reach. I don't know. You can see as we go into it. The blind spot is money and wealth is not spiritual. Now, on the surface, you might say, no, it's spiritual. But consider the wounds that are behind that, the worldly power wounds, that when we look around the world and we see people with a lot of money, a lot of status, a lot of worldly power who have dominated, controlled, harmed humans, animals, the planet, seems like they don't care about anyone but themselves. Have you ever put that together? I know I have, out of the woundedness of this and my own blind spot, I have put together that having a lot of money means greed, means this kind of behavior. It's unconscious, of course. It doesn't make sense when you start to, you know, line it out. It's like, what? Well, that's not true. But if you're living from that unconscious space, that unconscious belief, it can be very insidious, right? And so recognizing then that, and what happened for me was when that became clear that I was holding that kind of belief system, I said, wait a second though, there's tons of people with a lot of money who are super generous doing all kinds of good things in the world. And I thought, wow, I'd like to be one of those people. Well, I can't be one of those people if I'm holding this belief that money and wealth isn't spiritual, and so I'm going to hold it at arm's length, right? So it's until we make friends with this idea that we can welcome it in so that we have it to give out. Yeah, so my affirmation became, I am wealthy and generous, to come into that flow and to let go of this false belief. So I don't know what yours is, but there are other wounds that go with this one, such as religious wounds. You know, the idea that anything earthly is less than, right? The body is less than, the flesh is less than. We've heard that one before in old teachings, that money is evil, which is a misquote. It's the love of money in that quote, but it's really about just misplacing our attention and our energy. So all of these ideas, maybe you've thought, maybe you're a healer or somebody who does spiritual work and you think you shouldn't have to charge because it's spiritual work. Anybody ever do that one? Or it should be deeply discounted because it's spiritual work. Or maybe spiritual centers and places shouldn't talk about money or ask for money because they should just offer everything for free all the time. I mean, these don't make sense when we put them out in the light, but we carry them. And we bring a lot of energy and power that drains the true power by holding them. So this work is about shifting. This work is about shaking out, letting go of these places. As soon as they're illuminated, we can move on. We can go, wow, that's interesting that I was holding that idea. I don't want to hold that idea anymore. I'm going to shift. You want to do the one-minute mystic exercise? This comes from the book, and it helps us kind of get a sense of how you move through this. So if you'd like to do it, I offer you a moment to close your eyes. And just to bring to mind a life circumstance where you might feel a little bit bound up, let's say. A place that you might go into some limitation around. And as you feel into some of those feelings of maybe lack or limitation or fear, just know that you're in a blind spot. Just take a breath, remind yourself that you can get out of this blind spot. Whatever condition is confronting you, imagine yourself getting what you need, experiencing the outcome that you want. And now really feel that as reality. I already have this that I want or need. And breathe and let that feeling tone, whatever you feel as you receive, let it expand through your heart center. Let it expand through your whole body. Radiate that feeling out into your life and everyone and everything around you. And in this vibration of abundance, see if there's an affirmation you can speak for yourself, an already realized truth statement. And when you're ready, come back into this space. So anytime you can take a 1 minute time out and just feel into what's going on inside of you, notice if you're in a blind spot, and then feel your way and affirm your way out of it. It's really that simple. And when we engage multiple aspects of our being like this, our feeling nature, the power of the spoken word, our imagination, all of these work together for good to let us ground in that and recreate that as our reality. So what is money? As we talk about wealth this week, what is money? Essentially, money is energy. And we can infuse it with positive energy, or we can infuse it with negative energy. But if we infuse it with negative energy, remember, we'll be in that place where we're holding it at arm's length, or further out even, right? That if it's negative, then I don't want it, I don't want to have it, I don't want to give it, I don't want to receive it. That's basically what we're telling the universe, right? We're telling our internal source. If we infuse it with positive energy, that's great. But what if we just don't even infuse it with anything, but just let it be energy? Because that's what it is. It's just energy. Who doesn't want more energy, Anybody in this room think, I wish I didn't have so much energy? Right. So we want to increase energy. It's a good thing in and of itself. And how do we increase anything? We praise it, right? We bless it. That's how it multiplies. We give thanks for it. So that's the way we can treat money. Just recognizing its energy, it's moving through our lives, it's moving to us and from us, and we just bless it and thank it. That's all we need to do. All the other gymnastics that we do around money can go away. It doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be hard. It can just be, I go to my heart. I go to that place where I generate good. And from that place, I bring forth whatever I need, whenever I need it. I know it sounds too good to be true, but it really is true. And just remembering that having less money does not help anyone. Right? Isn't that a good one to know? Having less money doesn't actually help anyone. And having more money doesn't hurt anyone. So it's not a bad thing. I guess I got to just keep saying this one to myself because I'm still learning. So Rydell says, well, let's look at both. Did we look at the abundant truth with it? I don't think we did. Money and wealth is not spiritual, is the blind spot. Wealth is an attribute of spirit, truth, or God. He says, imagine who you could become if you knew all wealth and abundance was within you. Infinite, inexhaustible, unconditional. Imagine who you would become if you really, really, really lived from that truth. I mean, that sounds fun, doesn't it? I am imagining all kinds of things right now that I would love to manifest. Yeah, you are too. Candy's there too, right? Anybody else there? Are you starting to say, wow? Yeah, feels pretty good, doesn't it? And there it is, merely awaiting our activation, merely awaiting our expression, merely awaiting a word from us that says, I'm home, I'm grounded, I've come back, I'm sitting in spirit, I remember who I am now, I'm in my lane, and my lane is to be a creator because I was brought here from the creation itself to be a creator. It's my purpose in life to create, to generate goodness, to bring forth abundance. Having less does not help anyone. Having more does not hurt anyone. And so let's bring on more so we can share more and lift up the world in that kind of energy, not more stuff necessarily, but more harmony, more peace, more joy, more love, more freedom, all the things we wish for ourselves and everyone around us. So let's open the floodgates, shall we, of abundant good. Are you up for it? You good with it? Yes, I am too. I'm ready for it. We'll illuminate those abundance blind spots and reverse them. We'll heal these deep collective wounds, and that doesn't have to be big, arduous work. Even when I say it out loud, I think, oh, then we all just start to go, oh, yeah, that sounds like really big stuff. No. This is not hard. It's not hard when we are in the right, when we are standing in the right place. It's not, it becomes easy. That's all we have to do is stand in the right place. And then we can see clearly, we can feel, we can know, and we can start to co-create just as we were created to do. So I really want to encourage us to be unapologetic about abundance. Be unapologetic about your divine birthright to have, to give, to receive, because it's why you're here. So come home to that truth. Return again to the land of your soul. And in the land of your soul is a land that flows with milk and honey, right? It's a land that flows with all goodness and all sweetness and everything you could ever possibly need. And how many people in the world or causes have you longed to help? And you've thought, oh, I've wanted to give more to that, but I just don't have enough. Wipe it out of your vocabulary, because you do, because you have it in here, and you have everything you could possibly, we have everything we could possibly ever need. All we got to do is turn, shift our perspective, and recognize, wow, the creative power of the universe is within me. And imagine, as a community, as a society, what we could do when we recognize that individually and collectively. When we come together as a group and we say, anything is possible, because it's true. That's truth. And we can land in truth. It's the permanent truth. It's the ongoing flow of divine truth. And we are in it. And when we get out of it, no beating ourselves up. Remember, there's the source running to embrace us, to kiss us, to welcome us home, to celebrate that we've come home again to this truth. So let's be unapologetic and claim this for ourselves. I invite us to say this together. I am unapologetically one with the source of infinite wealth. So you are, and so it is.